So before we start, I just want to say she's one of the most lovely people I've ever had the joy of meeting in person and on the screen. I've had so much fun the time I was up with her, and I'm sickened that I didn't get to say goodbye. So when I come back, I'm looking forward to more chats, tunes, and she's going to show me how to make a straw hat.
Thanks, Mark. Okay, so I'm really pleased to welcome Bree. She's come to share her experience, strength, and hope with us tonight. And I'll hand the meeting over to you, Bree.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks for hosting. I'm Breach and I'm an alcoholic. And yeah, there's a bit of relief. You know, when I discovered I was an alcoholic, there was terror and there was relief, mixture of the two, you know. But it's like that's when my life really started, when I got to AA, and that was in 1987. And yeah, I really didn't want to stop, you know. Just felt like, oh, if only I could, you know, if only I could have a few more, if only I could control it, all of that. But the game was up, and AA helped me to get to that conclusion, you know, without with the help, you know, hearing other people sharing experience, strength, and hope. Yeah, I'm in a funny situation today. I've come up to visit my aunt. She just turned 97 the other day, and there's a little get together, and I'd kind of forgotten that I was doing the meeting, and then I was tempted to not come on the meeting. It's funny, I was talking it through with Eugene on the way up, because you know, he was saying, well, you can go on the meeting and then say that you need to leave, because it's kind of important that we have this get together, you know, just family, just her sisters. She's got two sisters, 90 and 80, late 80s, and there's a few cousins here. And I wasn't particularly nervous about coming, even though I knew that my aunt was in touch with my brother, and my brother has fallen out with me for a few years over my parents dying and sorting out the will, which often happens in families I know. And yeah, he'd been really angry with me the last time I spoke to him, and I put the phone down because he was shouting at me. And then I heard he'd given bad press to all the around the family, anybody that would listen. And then I walked into the room today, and who's sitting there, you know? And I hadn't really had time to think about it. And I said hello to everybody and hugged my aunt, and I said hello to him, you know, which is just amazing for me, because if somebody stepped on my toes, Jesus, I would never again entertain them, let alone the carrying of the resentment in my heart toward them, you know, injuring myself. But I actually kind of have felt sorry for him for where he's at, because he just reminds me of myself without a program, that life was unfair, it was unjust, I didn't get what I wanted, everybody else got what they wanted, I was the victim. And you know, that's how I felt when I was quite young, even, you know. And I kept thinking, well, you know, it's this family that's wrong, and I'll escape them. And I went off, you know, when I was 17, and then off when I was 18. I used to keep going back like the bad penny, of course, running out of money and running out of places to stay and all of that. But, you know, I was kind of filled with, I suppose you call it, fantasy of that, you know, one day, one place, my life was going to be. It was going to be amazing, but I had absolutely no clue how to get there, you know. So I was always changing situations, and you know, leaving school and then not knowing what to do with myself. Left school at 16 and then went off traveling to Sweden and looking after children. And I didn't really like that, because I don't have any maternal instinct, you know. I've never wanted kids, or I've never wanted to settle down, do the usual things that it seemed like most people wanted to do. But I couldn't tell you what I really wanted to do, though. You know, it was that mixed up. And in the middle of all of that, you know, I discovered alcohol quite young, 15, and, you know, going out, falling down the road, coming in, knees cut open, blackout, sick, very sick after drinking the next day, and swearing, you know, I won't do this again, and I'll just do it that I can control it. And all of that, I tried that for years and years until I was 29, you know. And with all my moving, I'd moved to Dublin at the time, and I thought, well, this is it now, and I'll buy a van, and I live in the back of the van, and I'm not going to pay any rent, I'm not going to pay any rates, I'm not going to, you know, there's kind of going to be no, I wanted no stability because I actually couldn't cope with life. I couldn't cope with relationships and I couldn't cope with staying in one place because I'd see people that I drank with and I wouldn't know what I'd done or said. And that used to bring up a lot of terror in me. And the only thing that I could see that would take that terror away was to drink again. But I was only in Dublin 1 year when I ended up going to AA. The head office at the time was in the South Circular Road, and I walked in and I was still in denial, saying to myself, well, maybe they just show me how to cut down. And a woman shared her experience and strength and hope with me, and that was the beginning of my journey, 1987, and that was in October. And I went to a meeting and Madonna House, and you know, that was just the very beginning. I was still full of denial, and I thought, oh, it would be different if I'm drinking at home. And but that only lasted a few weeks because it felt like AA got me. It wasn't me wanting to surrender. No way, didn't want to surrender at all. But I ended up going to the meetings and sharing with a man. I remember this man, I was living out in Bray. Of course, I made all these major changes that they say not to make. I was moving in with my boyfriend. I was changing job. I was moving out to Bray, you know, all in the space of a few weeks. And this man, he used to say, do you want to come to a meeting? And I'd say, oh, no, I'm going shopping. I used to think, how dare he ask me if I'm going to a meeting? The cheek of him, you know. But that man, I could feel that he cared. And I ended up telling him, well, I'm just having a few drinks. And he said to me, well, you're going to end up where you were. And those words were my lightning moment. You know, that was the beginning of it, the beginning of the end. Just knowing I just couldn't get away with this. You know, it wasn't going to be different. It wasn't going to be better. It was going to be the same thing again and again and again. And I don't know what intervened to tell me that that was the way it was going to be, you know, but something happened inside in my little brain. And it didn't happen, you know, all the time that I felt, oh, I wanted to surrender. I often really wanted to drink again, especially early days, you know, and my behavior hadn't changed. So I was going in the pubs, I was missing the pubs, I was missing the crack. I was thinking, my life is over. This is dull. Going to meetings, talking about yourself, listening to other people talking about themselves. I mean, that was like the last thing in the world. I didn't know how to talk about myself. And it seemed such a strange life. But I remember like the first occasion going around to a friend's house and having an evening with people and not drinking and waking up the next day and thinking, my God, I didn't drink last night. I remember the first time I went dancing. And I remember thinking, I can dance and I don't need to drink, you know. So those little things, they were big things to me. And they continued, you know, and it was kind of tough. You know, I remember my first Christmas and I was living with this guy and it was bedlam and he was drinking. He was leaving bottles around because he didn't like me being sober. And I was like torn between the two, you know, but the stronger urge was not to drink, you know, and something kept me going, something inside. And so I kept, you know, kept doing that reaching out thing of chatting with people, going to meetings, staying after, having a cup of tea, and yeah, finding people that I could talk to and that would listen and that I could listen to them. I probably listened too much, actually. You know, I've often been told I'm a good listener, and that for me, that can often be a lot of codependency that I don't know how to tell someone when to stop, you know, if they just keep going on and on and on and on. So, you know, I've discovered a lot of things about myself, and it was suggested that I went to ACOA. There was actually a course in Dunleary at the time, and I went to that, and it was really, really good because it kind of opened me up to the feelings that were behind why I was drinking the way I was and where did that all come from. And I needed to find that out because it was totally, totally baffling and confusing. And I felt really ashamed and I felt really dirty and I felt really bad about myself. You know, why had I behaved that way that I did for so many years? Why couldn't I see? You know, and I just learned that as an alcoholic, I'm powerless over alcohol. If I put alcohol into me, it starts off the chain reaction and I don't know when I'll stop. I totally lose that power, you know. So that took a while for me to really feel. Yes, I didn't put my hand up and say I want to be an alcoholic and cause as much wreckage and pain for myself and those around me as I possibly can. And eventually, you know, I got that acceptance that I suppose it's when life gradually started getting better, very, very gradual. Yeah, but I started discovering what I like doing and where I like going, and I had to leave the pubs behind for a while because it was very confusing for me hanging in pubs and trying to play music and just not being comfortable, you know. So I started doing a course and it was all about working with my hands, and that's what I discovered because of sobriety. So it was weaving and spinning and natural dyeing, and it was a 9 month long course, and that was the beginning of finding, like, what do they call it? Is it a passion or is it something you love doing? You know, I'd never known that because for me, work was just about getting enough money so that I could drink at the weekends or whenever I could, you know. So this was kind of something very different for me. And it was very odd. Life felt very odd and very strange. Here was I spinning wool. I was sharing a house with two lads who had regular jobs and regular girlfriends. I was going out with a drunk, you know, and I was thinking, when is my life going to make sense? When is it going to be? I say the word normal. I don't mean normal because I'd never sought out a normal life. It never really appealed to me, you know. The bohemian life kind of appealed to me, you know, freedom, travel, no responsibility, all of that. But gradually, you know, gradually I started doing the things I loved. I started playing music. You know, I had tried to do that in my drinking, but it wasn't very successful. I ended up in very bad places, very places that were injurious to my body and my soul and my spirit, and people who were very injurious to me. So, you know, this was different now, doing things sober and playing music. And that's what I do today. You know, it's a bit of a jump forward, but it's been a lot of years and it's hard to really say all the things that happened. There's just so many things, like it's like a lifetime, you know. It's 37 years, coming up to 38 years this year. And you know, amends with family, which was great, with my mother, my father before they went. And then there was the falling out with my brother. But I mean, who knows what may happen? I'm totally open, and that's the difference, you know. Today, I'm open to relationships mending rather than thinking, fuck them, they stood on my toe, I'll give them a wide berth and I won't bother again, you know. But to be able to walk into that room today and say hello, and he said hello back, by the way, you know. So, but if he didn't, so be it, you know. I hadn't planned anything, you know. Eugene said to me earlier, "You're nervous about it," and I kind of wasn't really. I was more nervous about getting tiles because I've been having a bathroom job done this week, and there's been muck and noise and people coming and going, and that is kind of, that can make me quite anxious, really, you know. And then got to the tile place today and he said, oh, we're closing in 10 minutes. But anyway, got the tiles, and the tile is supposed to come Monday and we'll see what'll happen. But I can get easily thrown, I can get easily overwhelmed with life, but I belong to something greater than myself today. That's AA, and that makes me feel I have my bolt home pole today where I can go to. You know, I have my people in my life where I can share with. That changes a lot as well. You know, my sponsor, she's got dementia, and it is quite tough for her with anxiety and change in her life. She doesn't remember a lot of the things that she's walked me through. And she's been an amazing woman in my life. And I pass that on too with women that I sponsor, and some men as well. And you know, to be able to carry this message, that's like being one of the biggest gifts in my life. You know, and sometimes I've done it really fucking codependently, you know. really tried to fix and sort people and brought drug addicts into my house and walked into a room, this girl, she was supposed to be getting sober, and the smell of hash would knock a dog. And I was thinking, what the fuck can I do now? You know, I can't throw her out in the street. She's pregnant. She's nearly 9 months pregnant, you know. But anyway, things did work out. She got herself a place to stay. But unfortunately, she didn't make it. She died many years ago. You know, she went back out there. There was another sponsor from years ago, and she was fabulous to me in my early days. She went back out and she's dead a couple of years now. So I realized this is, this is life threatening and it's just for today. And I have to keep tending my spiritual garden. I look after my physical garden very well, but I have to keep looking after my spirit. And I know meetings really help me. Sometimes they piss me off, but they really help me, you know, listening to others and having that empathy, you know, for somebody walking in the door and thinking, God, that was me. And it feels like yesterday sometimes when I hear people share and when I think about yesterday, well, that day when I did walk through the door, I just remember it so vividly. Oh my God, you know, I was putting my hand up and asking for help, and that was new to me, totally new. But there was somebody who was saying that there is a way out, you know, and she seemed to know exactly what I'd been through. Of course, she did. She was an alcoholic herself. So she was offering me a solution, go to a meeting. And it was like, oh, Jesus, no, there's going to be people there. If it was a meeting on my own, great, I could do that. But you know, that pride that was in me of letting people see me being so vulnerable. I mean, all I did was cry through the meeting and smoke. And, you know, gradually I was able to have a chat at the end. I thought, I can't be an alcoholic. I don't drink every day. I'm not in a park bench and blah, blah, blah. But I got the message, yeah, I'm powerless over alcohol. Can't drink safely. Yeah, as I said at the beginning, there was a relief in that, a relief and a terror, an absolute terror of living life. But I'm learning a day at a time how to live my life, how to be of benefit to myself and those around me. And yeah, I won't stay for the full meeting because, as I say, my auntie goes to bed probably about 7. So I'll just stay on for a while. And thank you for asking me, Jan.